I wish you a very happy Friday, and I hope you're going to have a wonderful weekend and a great Lord's Day. Make sure you go and spend some time at your home congregation, encouraging others as you are encouraged, worshiping, fellowshipping, praising, praying, serving, learning, all the things that we do as the body of Christ in a local setting. If you don't have a home congregation, you need to find one. So get busy, do your research, get out there, find a place, get plugged in, stay plugged in. If you're actively looking for a home congregation right now, and you happen to be within driving distance of the Elkhart East building, we certainly invite you to come and check us out. I also want to say thank you to those of you making it possible for this to be on this radio station and also online. We appreciate that support, and God bless you for it. If there's anyone that would like to join in that, it's easy enough to do. Just take note of the contact information at the end of the program today, and then send any one-time or ongoing support to that address. Thanks a lot. Let's open up to 2 Samuel chapter 2 and restart this bit of information about David officially becoming king. Now, he becomes king first of the tribe of Judah. And that's because of some friction that happens due to the first king being from the tribe of Benjamin and his surviving relatives not being willing to give it up to David, even though they've heard that God has anointed David through Samuel as the next king of all of Israel. So there's a little bit of a civil war that we move into at this transition point. But first, let's read what we already did last session at the beginning of chapter 2 of 2 Samuel. After this, meaning after the death and the mourning period over King Saul, David inquired of Ahimaaz, "Shall I go up into any of the cities of Judah?" And Ahimaaz said to him, "Go up." And David said, "To which shall I go up?" And he said, "To Hebron." And I went through the details of how the Urim and the Thummim would have been used to get this process taken care of, since David has the very young high priest in his group. And so we know that they end up going to Hebron, which for all practical purposes is the capital city of the tribal region of Judah. It is significant as the place where the matriarchs and the patriarchs are buried at the Cave of Machpelah. It's also the place where the famous fighter Caleb kicked out the giants and set up his own inheritance. So it's a really important place. And so David went up there, we're told in verse 2. His two wives also, Ahinoam of Jezreel of Judah, and Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel of Judah. And so he brings the two ladies he's just been recently married to within the last 2 years. And they all go to Hebron. Verse 3, David brought up his men who were with him. We have been consistently talking about 600 fighters that have been working with him. So they're all brought up. Everyone with his household, so they're bringing their family members with them. They've left Ziklag, south of Gath, and they've moved over about a day's travel eastward over to Hebron. So everyone with his household, and they all lived in the towns of Hebron. So Hebron is a walled city, and it has associated communities around it, some of them walled, some of them not walled, that are within easy walking distance of the city itself. So David's people move into Hebron and the commuting area immediately around Hebron. Then verse 4, which is where we closed last time, didn't get a lot of chance to talk about this. The men of Judah all came together, and there they anointed David king over the house of Judah. Not over the house of Israel, but over the house of Judah. So the tribal people of Judah all agree David should be the next king. They're all on board with that. And no surprise, since he is from the tribe of Judah. But they would have had a ceremony where they pour oil over his head. It's probably the high priest that does that. And then he puts on probably the crown that Saul had been wearing when he was king, which was recovered by that Amalekite that got himself killed with his story that he told David when he handed it over to him. And so David has now taken on the trappings of royalty. Next part of the story. When they told David, it was the men of Jabesh-Gilead who buried Saul. So now he's starting to get reports of what happened to Saul's body, to the bodies of the royal entourage that were killed on Mount Gilboa. They let him know that, you know, the bodies were displayed. Well, first, the head was chopped off of Saul and it was put around in Philistine territory. But his decapitated body and the bodies of his sons were all nailed up to the walls, the clay walls of the high city area of Beth Shan, and then the Jabesh-Gileadites, they came by night and grabbed the remains and took them and burned them and interred the ashes, interred the bones. So David finds out about that. So verse 5, David sent messengers to the men of Jabesh-Gilead and said to them, "May you be blessed by he who is, because you showed this loyalty to Saul your lord and buried him. Now may he who is show steadfast love and faithfulness to you. And I will do good to you because you've done this thing. Now, therefore, let your hands be strong, be valiant, for Saul your lord is dead, and the house of Judah has anointed me king over them." So David thanks them for honoring the deaths of the royal entourage in the battle, and lets them know, "By the way, I have already been put on the royal throne in place of King Saul by my fellow tribesmen." And I think it was an invitation to them to join in with that acknowledgement. Now, that'll come later. Verse 8 is where we find out that there is contention over the throne. But Abner, the son of Ner, which means that Abner is the cousin of the late king, and I've shared with you before, I think he's the younger cousin of the king. Abner, the son of Ner, commander of Saul's army, took Ish-bosheth. Now, his original name was Ish-baal. That shows up in the Chronicles. He was not at the battle. He is the surviving son. I think he was the designated survivor. I believe that he was probably left behind in Gibeah on purpose so that not everybody in the royal line was put at risk. So they took Ish-baal, the son of Saul, and they brought him over to Mahanaim. Now we will discover in the process of our study, that the fear at Gibeah was that the Philistines would come to Gibeah and overrun the capital city and kill anybody associated with the Saul kingdom. And so they evacuate the capital city of Gibeah. This is where we find out that they evacuated the capital across the Jordan Valley and then up into Gilead itself to a fortified city named after the events of Jacob's return to the region, where he saw two camps, his own camp and the camp of God's angels. It's called Mahanaim, two camps. And so this is the capital now for the Saul kingdom. It's in exile. And so Abner takes the surviving son, Ishbaal, to this new capital city, and he made him king over Gilead and the Asherites and Jezreel and Ephraim and Benjamin and all Israel. So he is declared to be the king over all the regions of Israel. But there's a bit of a problem because some of the regions are now kind of overrun by Philistines. You know, the whole Jezreel Valley is currently being overrun by Philistines. But it's acknowledged, I think, in these words that the tribal area of Judah is in rebellion against this idea of having a Saul king over them. Verse 10 helps us with understanding the age of Ishbaal. Ishbaal, Saul's son, was 40 years old when he began to reign over Israel. So no doubt about that. He was about 20 years old then when Saul began to reign, because Saul's reign is only 20 years long. He is slightly younger, therefore, than Prince Jonathan was. So this is one of the reasons I think that he is more than likely the second son, and he was therefore kind of the designated survivor. Then we are told by the author of 2 Samuel that he only reigned 2 years. And that seems to be 2 calendar years. So the year of his father's death and the year following that. So the house of Judah followed David. So we've got 2 kingdoms going on at the exact same time. Verse 11. The time that David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah was 7 years and 6 months. That's very precise, and that will help us understand when Jerusalem is taken over by David and his people. And we'll come back to that later. Verse 12. Abner, the son of Ner, so this is the commander of the Israeli armies following Ishbaal. So the servants of Ishbaal, the son of Saul, they went out from Mahanaim to Gibeon. Now, this is the first time, I think, that we can point to Gibeon clearly being a place of worship for both groups, both the people following King David and the people following King Ishbaal. We already suspected that Nob was the residence city for the priests serving at the new tabernacle. And Nob seemed to be very close to Gibeon. And we will know later that Gibeon is definitely tagged as the site of the renovated tabernacle. So I believe what we have described here is the first incident of mandatory gathering to the tabernacle after the battle of Mount Gilboa. Remember that the Israeli adult men were required to present themselves at the tabernacle during the Feast of Passover, the Feast of Pentecost, and the Feast of Tabernacles. We don't know exactly when the Battle of Mount Gilboa took place, but it is my belief that at the next mandatory gathering festival at the tabernacle at Gibeon, this is what happened. Verse 13. Joab, the son of Zeruiah. Zeruiah is the sister of David, and therefore Joab is one of his nephews, but Zeruiah is David's much older sister, and so it's possible that Joab is not terribly far from age to David himself. So Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and the servants of David went out and met them at the pool of Gibeon. So we've got the commander of the kingdom of Ishbaal, the Saul kingdom. And we've got the commander of the army of Judah and the David kingdom, both at the tabernacle at the exact same time. And they're at the pool of Gibeon, which is right next to the tabernacle. Remember, the tabernacle uses a lot of water to do its ceremonies, so it's not surprising that there's a water source here. So they all sat down, the one on the one side of the pool and the other on the other side of the pool. So can you feel the tension here? We got a little bit of a civil war going on. It's not blown up into full-scale war just yet, but there's a lot of tension, and you've got the supporters of one side on that side of the pool and the supporters of the other side on this side of the pool. And then Abner said to Joab, "Let the young men arise and compete before us." Now, he's not talking about let's have some sporting events. He's saying, let's have a fight. Let's have a rumble here. Let's decide all of this, who's going to be in charge, by letting representative combat take place. That's the suggestion that they're making. And Joab agreed. He said, let them arise. And they arose, and they passed over by number. 12 for Benjamin and Ishbaal, the son of Saul, and 12 of the servants of David. So you can appreciate the symbolism here. There's 12 tribes of Israel, and so each side of this little civil war, this civil disagreement, designates 12 men, 12 warriors. And all 12 warriors are going to go against each other in pairs. And the winner takes all seems to be the indication. But it doesn't turn out that way. It turns into a draw. Verse 16, each caught his opponent by the head and thrust his sword into his opponent's side, so they fell down together. So instead of there being one side clearly the winner in this representative combat, it's nothing but death for 24 guys. And so the place gets called Halkrat Hazazurim, which literally means the field of sword edges. It's at Gibeon. And apparently when the writer of 2 Samuel is doing this, everybody knew where it was located, by the pool there at the tabernacle. And then the battle was very fierce that day. When the representative combat didn't pan out, apparently a full-scale battle broke out instead. So imagine this. We're near the worship site for Israel, and we've got the first battle of the civil war between the kingdom of Saul and the kingdom of David. And so the battle was very fierce that day. Abner and the men of Israel were beaten before the servants of David. So the Saul side begins to lose. Verse 18, the three sons of Zeruiah were there. Joab, he's the eldest. Abishai, he's the middle guy. And Asael. Now they're the three nephews of David. Now Asael was as swift of foot as a wild gazelle. So he is really, really fast. And so when the battle goes against Abner and the forces of Ishbaal, and they're routed and they break and they begin to run away, we are told that Asahel pursued Abner specifically. And as he went, he turned neither to the right hand nor to the left from following Abner. So he is trying to chase Abner down and kill him. So Abner looked behind him and said, "Is it you, Asahel?" And he answered, "It is I." Now, these guys would have known each other. They have fought together. Even if Asahel is the youngest of these three nephews of David, he is of military age and has served with Commander Abner. And so Abner said to him, "Turn aside to your right hand or to your left. Seize one of the young men and take his spoil." You know, if you're going to try to kill anybody, why don't you go to try to kill one of those younger guys and take his stuff? But Asahel would not turn aside from following him. Abner said again to Asahel, "Turn aside from following me. Why should I strike you to the ground? How then could I lift up my face to your brother Joab?" So he begins to try to argue with him, convince him, "You got to let me go. Because if we start fighting, I will kill you. And I don't want to have to deal with that with your brother." Joab and Abner apparently had some sort of relationship. This is very similar to things that happened on in our own American Civil War, where you had people that served together previous to 1860, who were in units together, who were back in school together. And then suddenly they're on opposite sides of the field of battle, and they don't like it. And so this is where they're at. But Asahel won't listen. He refused to turn aside. And so now something happens that I think needs to be described differently than the way a lot of the commentaries do it. It says, "Therefore Abner struck him in the stomach with the butt of his spear." Now, it is my conviction. I cannot prove it, but I feel that it matches what we're seeing in the context here. That Abner does not want to kill Asahel. He doesn't. And so I believe he decides to use a non-lethal strike to allow him to escape. So I believe that was his intention. So I believe he stops and he slams the butt of his spear into the solar plexus region of Asahel's chest, right there at the point where your diaphragm is. And if you've ever been hit there, you know it knocks the breath out of you and you are incapacitated for some time. Even when you can get back up again, you're not able to breathe in deeply for a while. And so it would have given Abner the chance to run farther away. And I think that was his intention. However, as sometimes happens in war, things that you didn't intend to happen, happen. I think his spear shattered in a spiral break. and the butt of his spear turned into a very sharpened point. And it drove itself right through the cardiac sac of Asael and killed him instantly. It says that the spear came out his back. Now, normally, the butt of a spear is not sharpened. But this one goes right straight through. And so what happens is Asahel is dead. And so all the people who came to that very place where Asahel had fallen and died stood still. They can't believe it. One of the three brothers is dead. One of the three nephews of King David is dead. The guy that was really fast is dead. Verse 24, but Joab and Abishai pursued Abner. And as the sun was going down, they came to the hill of Ammah, which lies before Gia on the way to the wilderness of Gibeon. So they left Gibeon and the route was heading eastward toward the Jordan Valley. And so somewhere along the way, they lose their sunlight. The people of Benjamin gathered themselves together behind Abner, became one group. They took their stand on the top of the hill. So the routed forces rally and put up a final defense. Abner called over to Joab, "Shall the sword devour forever? Do you not know that the end will be bitter? How long will it be before you tell your people to turn from the pursuit of their brothers?" So this is Abner asking for a ceasefire. It says, "Do we have to kill any more people today, Joab?" And Joab said, "As God lives, if you had not spoken, surely the men would not have given up the pursuit of their brothers until the morning." And so Joab blew the trumpet. All the men stopped and pursued Israel no more, nor did they fight any more.